going to be a city in which the church will live for 1,000 years, along with a group of Old Testament saints from Adam back to or up to Abraham, and myriads of angels. Not all the angels will be there, because there's myriads of angels, but there will be a myriad of angels there. And this city is going to be so different from any that we've ever seen or heard of. In the first place, we saw in the 11th verse that the glory of God would be there, and we saw by looking at the glory of God that this is quite possibly that God in that garment of light, so that there will be a source of light here in this New Jerusalem. And the city itself is a reflective surface, and we saw that in that 11th verse, because it says the light from the city, the light of her, the light from the city, her light. In other words, this is light that comes from the city, will be like that that's reflected from a crystal, a clear crystal. And a crystal reflects light. So this city is a reflective surface. And we saw that down around the bottom of the city, there's going to be a wall that has 12 gates. And at each of the gates, there's going to be one angel, not a saint. Now, you know, your Mormon people teach that the angels are resurrected saints. The angels are created spirit beings superior to any human being at this point in time. When we're finally glorified and like Christ, we will be superior in authority to them. Now, whether we will be in abilities is problematic, but we will be superior in authority to them. We'll be like Christ. So there's an angel at each of these gates, and we'll tell you why as we go along. They're to guard the gates, to keep out those that shouldn't come in through those gates. And we saw that there's three gates on each of the sides of the city. It's going to be square on the base. And you have that on the 16th verse. The city lies four square. Now, some have misunderstood this word four square, thinking that's implying that it's a cube. And John's looking up at the sky, seeing the New Jerusalem come down from the God out of heaven. And he's seeing the base of it. Now, this word four square means four angles. That's all it means. It's a compound word in the original, and it simply means four angles. The base of it has four angles. In other words, the base of it is a square. It has four angles. Now, it says lies four square. The word for lie, kaimai, can mean to lie, to recline, or to be laid. It's laid four square, four angles. But that's just looking at the base of it as he's looking up at this New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven. Now, we know that because it's going to tell you something about this city. It's going to be a geometrical figure that has the measurements of this city so that the height and the breadth and the length are all equal. Now, you have that in the 16th verse. The city lies or has been laid with four angles, the length as large as the breadth. So that means it's a square on the bottom. You look at the bottom of it. It's square in shape, each side equal. And then it says in the bottom part of that verse, the length and breadth and height of the height of it are equal. Now, there's only two geometrical figures that meet these standards. One would be a cube, but a cube would be out of place. When we see where the light comes from, a cube could not reflect light. Not if the source of the light was right up at the middle of the cube at the top. It'd be impossible for the cube to reflect light. Now, the only other possible geometric figure is a pyramid. And it doesn't have to be a pyramid with straight sides coming down. These sides will be like a lens. They'll be sloped so that it'll reflect light, and we'll show you how this works. And so this will be a pyramid. But notice how large it's going to be. It's going to be tremendously large. Because it says in the 16th verse, the city lies four square, and the length is large as the breadth, and he measured the city with the reed 12,000 furlongs. Now, if you use Schofield's margin and the measurement there for a furlong, 582 2 feet. If you multiply that, 582 feet by 12,000, that'll give you the number of feet. And then you divide it by 5,280, that'll give you the miles, you see. Now, if you figure that basis, it only is 1,322 miles, but most figure that this furlong is a little bigger than this. So in most commentaries, you'll read 1,500 miles. Now, you think of this city, 1,500 miles on the base, measuring the base, and 1,500 miles high. Now, just to get a picture of it, supposing you sat this city on the United States so that one edge of the city was along the East Coast. Do you know that this city would reach to Denver, Colorado, and it would reach from the Great Lakes area almost to the Gulf of Mexico? You can see this city isn't going to sit on Earth. It would make the Earth topple. It would make the Earth wobble on its orbit. We'll see where it is and why it is. But this is a huge city. If you set it down where the city of Jerusalem is now, it would cover two-thirds of the Mediterranean. It would cover Syria and part Iraq, and it would cover part of Arabia and over into Africa. There would be no land of Palestine if you put this thing on Earth and put it there. Now, there will be a city of Jerusalem on Earth that will be 50 miles square. We'll look in just a few moments and tell you how we get that. So there will be a Jerusalem on Earth. But it's going to be one of the biggest cities, and it's not going to be like Los Angeles. Los Angeles is a sprawl. Oh, it's 50 miles. But it's a sprawl. Now, we used to live there, and out Downey and out to Englewood, where the airport is now, you could drive. Back in the 1940s, you'd drive for quite a distance without seeing any buildings out toward Englewood and there. But now it's all sprawled in. But it's not well designed, let's put it that way. It's just a sprawl. The earthly city of Jerusalem is going to be well designed. Every street laid out right, and parts of it just exacting. The details are given in the last part of Ezekiel for that. And so the earthly Jerusalem will be 50 miles square, but this Jerusalem is going to be 1,300 to 1,500 miles square on the base, and the height of it, 1,500 miles. Now think of it. Los Angeles is approximately, with all of its suburbia, Englewood and all of the Downey and Whittier and all of the suburbia, is approximately 50 miles in area. But it isn't 50 miles high. See? This city is going to be as high as it is long, because it's not a city like we think of it. In fact, there's not going to be any buildings here, and we'll show you why. There's two things we've already read in your hearing that would tell you that. We read something this morning that would tell you that. All right? And so it's going to be a city that will be reflective, but huge, huge. It reflects. Now notice also in the 11th verse, it says the city gives a light which is a reflection of God's glory. And the light is clear like a crystal. Now, a crystal is clear like glass, but it has facets on, even in the raw, when you dig it up, it has facets on that reflect light. Now, down, if you look in the last part of the 18th verse. Let's look at the 18th verse. And you'll notice that the city proper, now you have a wall down below and you have 12 foundations, but this is talking about the city proper. You get inside the wall, there'll be a street running around all around the wall like a hall, and then the city proper as it goes up, notice what it is. It says the city was pure gold. Now you're going to have the word like, and the word like here is not hos, it's the word homoiao, which means similar to, but not the same in substance. And so it says it's like, similar to, clear glass. Now, have you ever seen some gold right after it's poured, and it's very smooth, and it looks like you can look right into it, the depth of it? It's like the car wax people advertise, you know, the depth of the wax job. It looks like you can look a foot down into the thing. You don't stop with the surface. And the same thing is true of brass or copper when it's polished so that it's very polished. You look at it, it looks like you're looking right into the, past the surface of the thing. And that's true of gold. Now, as I understand, we've never had 100% pure gold. 99%, there's always a few impurities they can't get out here on Earth. But this is going to be pure gold. And it's going to be so shiny that it looks like glass, but it's not glass. Again, you have reflective surface, you see. If you were looking into polished gold so it looks like you can look right down a foot or two into the thing, it's reflecting. So the city itself is pure gold, and it's like glass. So it's so that you can look into it, and you can see it, and it will reflect light. So the city itself is a reflective. Notice no buildings, because the city is pure gold. Now notice also, you have this wall around the base of this pyramid. And by the way, this wall will be 216 feet high, if you look at the 17th verse. And he measured the wall, and the wall is 144 cubits, according to the measure of man, that is, from the angel. Now, the angel measured it, but he measured it like a man would measure it, using the measurements of a man. And so he says that it's 144 cubits. A cubit was a man's measure. It measured from the elbow down to the fingers. It was usually 18 inches. And so sometimes it was 22 inches, 18 inches, depending on how you had a long-armed man. And the guy with the 22-inch would have been a good boxer. He'd had a lot of reach. But anyway, taking that as 18 inches, that would be 216 feet tall. So these walls will be 216 feet tall around the base. But then below that you have 12 foundations, you see. So you have 12 foundations, you have this wall, and there's gates on the wall. Now let's talk about those gates, and it says on those gates that there's the 12 names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Now there's been an awful lot of confusion here because I've read some very good authorities, and they just get confused. I want you to turn back with me to the book of Genesis, and I'd like you to look at the 49th chapter. Now, in the 49th chapter of Genesis, you have the 12 sons of Jacob, or Israel, and these are the 12 tribes of Israel. All right, these are the 12 tribes. And we'll see when we get to Ezekiel that on the city gates of the earthly Jerusalem, these are the names you'll find. But our pastor Spurbeck likes to talk about the 13 tribes of Israel. And it raises sometimes eyebrows. I've seen it. I get tickled at it because I know what he's talking about. You see, here were the 12 legitimate sons of Israel. They are the 12 tribes. But Joseph had two sons. He had two sons. Manasseh was one of them. And Levi, when they went into the land, now to inherit the land, Levi could inherit no land. So to have 12 tribes, God took one of the sons of Joseph so that he could have a double portion as promised in the 49th chapter of Genesis. And so really what you have when you get to Numbers, if you look at Numbers, the second chapter, for inheriting the land, you actually have 13 names. 12 of them were sons of Jacob. One of them is a son of the son of Jacob. You see? So if you look at the second chapter of Numbers, you're going to get different names, one different name than you got over in the 49th chapter. And the reason for it is found in the, if you look at, there's two verses that tell you, if you look at Numbers 1, verse 49. Only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them among the children of Israel. And then turn again
over to Numbers 2:33. But the Levites were not numbered among the children of Israel as the Lord had commanded. Now, this numbering was for the inheritance in the land, possessing the land. And that's always true. When you're talking about Israel getting land, Levi's left out because they were the priestly branch. They couldn't own any land. They were supported by the tithes of these other people. But to keep 12 tribes, they took a child, Manasseh, of Joseph. You get it? All right, now you can see this carried through in the millennium even. If you look at Ezekiel 43, you're going to have the division of the land in the millennium, and you're going to see again that Levi is going to be left out, and you're going to have Manasseh in. So this is the 48th chapter of Ezekiel, and you have it in the 4th and 5th verses where Manasseh's there, but you won't find Levi. This is the division of the land again, though Levi is going to get some land in the heart of the city. All right? But look, if you will, at the 48th chapter and the 31st and 32nd verses, where on the earthly Jerusalem you're going to have gates, 12 gates. Remember, don't confuse them with the 12 gates of the heavenly Jerusalem. Calling it heavenly because it's going to be in the second heaven, not the third heaven, which it comes down out of. All right? So let's look at the 48th chapter and the 31st verse, and notice now when it comes to the gates, it goes back, it reverts back to the 49th chapter of Genesis and lists the 12 sons of Jacob minus his grandson, Manasseh, who was a son of Joseph. Got what I'm saying? When it's dealing just with the 12 tribes, you'll never find Manasseh, you'll always find Levi. But when it's dealing with getting land, you'll never find Levi. You'll find a son of Joseph added so that Joseph really gets two parts. You see, if I get something, my son gets something, that's two parts in the family. And he got a double portion. All right, now notice, if you will, in the 31st verse, it's going to name the gates. And I think that the gates in the heavenly Jerusalem are going to reflect the gates in the earthly Jerusalem. Exactly the same arrangement. Remember, we read that there are 12 gates in the New Jerusalem, and they're east and west and north and south. So the city is always going to be oriented to the earth the same way. Now notice it tells you that down in the earthly Jerusalem. The gates of the city, this is the earthly city, a 50-mile square city on the present location. The center of it will be at Shiloh, not the present city of Jerusalem. The center of it will start from Shiloh and go out, and it'll cover where this present city of Jerusalem is. But the gates of the city shall be after the names of the tribes of Israel. Three gates northward, one for Reuben, one for Judah, and Levi. There he is. He shows up. He's one of the sons of Jacob. But he won't show up when you're inheriting land. All right. Now, I believe that if you take this, that in the New Jerusalem, on the north side, you're going to have three names, Reuben, Judah, and Levi. And you'll have them in the earthly Jerusalem. They will correspond. Now, we'll tell you why. People will leave the earthly Jerusalem, go out a certain gate, and they have to enter that same gate when they go up to the New Jerusalem. All right, we'll talk about that. Now then, it goes on to say, remember, you got Levi here now. You don't have him where there's land. This is no land. This is a gate. This is going in and out. That's what gates are for. Then it says on the east side, you're going to have one gate for Joseph, Benjamin, and Dan. Now those are three of the sons of Jacob. And then on the south side, you're going to have one gate for Issachar, Simeon, Issachar, and Zebulun. And on the west gate, you're going to have one gate for Gad, one for Asher, and one for Naphtali. Now turn over to Revelation 21, and right alongside of the 12th verse, I would put down, if I were you, for your margin, because you won't, well, you do have it. Schofield has it. Compare Ezekiel 48, 31 through 34. I didn't realize that I really did this on my own, but it's kind of nice to see he agrees with it. I hadn't looked at that before. But Scofield gives you a margin that tells you, look back there at those 12 gates. I think they correspond. On earth, if you go out this gate, you have to go into the comparable gate there. It won't be us. We live there for the 1,000 years. All right, we'll talk about who it'll be. Well, let's do that. Who will it be that'll enter and leave these gates and enter these gates? Well, anyone that goes to the New Jerusalem from earth has to go in a certain prescribed way. And if you turn back to Zechariah, the 8th chapter, we want to show you something. The reason the name over those gates is a Jewish tribe is because nobody goes in from the earthly Jerusalem to the New Jerusalem. Nobody goes unless they go with a Jew. And the Jew is one tribe or the other. Now they talk about the lost tribes of the house of Israel today. They're only lost to us. They're not lost to God. When God starts the millennium and says to this Jew, you're of Judah, God knows he's of Judah, and that's what he's going to be from then on. So there'll be no lost tribes of the house of Israel in the millennium. They're lost today because the Jews are dishonest. You know that you find more Kohens than you understand. And you know what Kohen means? Priest. And what it means is this tailor over here and this dry cleaner over here took a name because he liked it. Doesn't belong to him. So whenever you hear about a Kohen, remember the guy's bragging that he's a priest, but he probably is not of the tribe of Levi. They just took it for prestige. So you have a more exorbitant number of Kohens in the world that don't really belong to Kohens. But God will know who the real Kohens are when the millennium begins. Nothing is hidden from God, so remember that. Nothing is lost to God. So when God sets up the millennium in the person of His Son, Jesus Christ, who is God, He will know all of the tribes of the nation of Israel, and He will assign them. So in the millennium, any Gentile who wants to go to the earthly Jerusalem and from the earthly Jerusalem to the new Jerusalem for a special reason, we'll find out about it, he's going to have to do that if he wants to live the whole 1,000 years. These people will be in natural bodies. They'll be subject to death. And if they want to live the whole 1,000 years, they'll have to go, if they're a Gentile, with a Jew. And if they're a Jew, they'll have to go through the gate of their tribe. Now in Zechariah 8, if you look back there, I want to show you something very important. And as we're turning there, realize this. This is not minimizing the church's relationship or position in the millennium. Christ and the church will be ruling over all of this with equal power. So no matter what these do, Christ and the church have equal power and rule over all of these. Let's do that. Hold your finger in Zechariah and turn to Revelation 2. I want to show you that. So when we say that you read people that are just foolish, they take these words that I'm saying this morning and twist them. And they'll say something like this. You're saying that the Jew's superior in the millennium. He is over the Gentiles on earth, but not over the church of Christ. Don't you see? He is over the Gentiles on earth, but not over the church in Christ. So we're not making the Jew superior to the church. But they say that. We say that. Now you heard me say I didn't say that. And I want you to understand that. Look at Revelation 2 and you'll see what I'm saying. Revelation 2, verse 26 and 27 tells you the position of the church at this time. We're going to rule over every one of those Jews. We're going to rule over every one of those Gentiles. None of them will have any, can't touch a candle to the church, which is the bride of Christ. All right, Revelation 2, he that overcomes. The overcomer is the church saint, the grace believer. I was reading Zane Hodges' book, The Gospel and Siege, and he makes this overcomer here to be a super-duper victorious Christian. Hey, if you're going to do that, you keep the overcomer in context here, and it's only the one that had overcome the problems of that specific church, but that's not the way it is. The overcomer is the grace believer, the church saint. 1 John 5 defines it. Now notice, the overcomer is the one that keeps guards in his mind and heart, not doing here, Christ's works. Now, what were Christ's works? The work that saved you. Three works on the cross. We call it salvation, but it's really redemption, propitiation, and reconciliation. We keep his works to the end. That's what the overcomer is. I will give him authority. That word power, if you have a Scofield margin, says authority over the nations. Now, if I said to you, I'm going to give you authority over the nations, you said, how many? I said, the nations. You know what that means? It means all without saying all. And we'll have authority over all the nations. Now he's going to tell us how much authority. He, the overcomer, shall rule them with a rod of iron. As vessels of a potter shall they be broken, just like I received from my Father. So we're going to have similar authority over the nations that Christ has received from the Father. And you'll read about that in Psalm 2 if you read it from verse 5 through 8. Now then, in Zechariah 8, it's going to tell us these are people on earth. They have natural bodies. If they don't go to the New Jerusalem and eat something and drink something, they're going to die before the 1,000 years is over. If they go from the earthly Jerusalem to the heavenly Jerusalem and eat something and drink something, then they'll live for the 1,000 years. All right? Now, Zechariah 8 tells you who will go and how they will go. And notice here you have some Gentiles that really don't know God. They're not saved yet. It tells you that. So in Zechariah 8, verse 20, down through 23, and I'm going to read it. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, it shall yet come to pass. Now, it hasn't come to pass yet. It's going to yet come to pass. This is looking forward into what we call the millennium or the kingdom of Christ and or the kingdom of the heavens. And so he says, and the inhabitants of one city shall say to another. Now this gives you a clue. At the end of the tribulation period, most cities on earth are destroyed. And when they start the millennium, they're going to be an agricultural society, and cities will be much smaller than they are now, much like Cornelius was 4 or 5 years ago. Small cities with agriculture. And it's going to take time for those cities to grow. And so this has gone along in the millennium so that you're going to have actually probably a third generation person, because there's another reason. Everybody going in the millennium will be saved, but they will have children, and those children will have to get saved for themselves. So this is looking at least a second generation into the millennium, probably a third. Two reasons: cities have already developed, and you're going to have unsaved people. But no unsaved people begin the millennium, so this has to be along in the millennium, you see? All right, now let's look at what it says. The inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Lord. And notice, to pray before the Lord, they have to go somewhere, like they did in the Old Testament. All right? Let us go speedily to pray before Jehovah, and seek Jehovah of hosts, and I will go also. Yea, many people and strong Gentiles, strong nations, strong Gentiles, none Jews. Theme. Yea, many people and strong Gentiles shall come to seek Jehovah of hosts in Jerusalem. Notice, Jerusalem. Now this is talking about the earthly Jerusalem. Once a year, Christ and the church will come down from the New Jerusalem to the earthly Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles. Then we'll go back. And those who have gained the right will come in their turn through the gate of the earthly Jerusalem to the gate up there in the New Jerusalem so that they can eat and drink and live 1,000 years. Now notice what it says. And to pray before the Lord. Why don't they pray where they are? Because at this time you're going to have to go to the earthly Jerusalem to pray before the Lord. That's not us. We'll be with Christ. We don't have to pray anymore. No more faith. All sight. We've arrived at what we shall be. While it doth not yet appear what we shall be, we have to, by faith, approach God. But we can talk to him anywhere we are if we do it by faith. Now, these can't. Now notice what it says in the 23rd verse. This is the most important verse in the whole section. First, it proves that a Gentile cannot come before the Lord without taking a hold of a Jew. Literally, actually, taking a hold of his skirt. All right? Secondly, it tells you that these Gentiles don't know the Lord, but the Jew does. All right, now let's look at the 23rd verse. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days that haven't come yet, back in the 20th verse, it shall come to pass that 10 men shall... 10 men... Now let's change this wording so it makes a little more sense. 10 men out of all the languages of the nation shall take hold, even shall take a hold of the skirt of him that is... All the languages of the Gentiles shall take hold, even shall take a hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew. Now, when they take a hold of the skirt of the Jew, they say, we have heard that God is with you. Now, why didn't they say God is with you? Hey, but the Gentiles aren't. But it's 10 Gentiles and one Jew. And where are they going? They're going up to the earth with 10 Gentiles tagging along behind him. They come to the earthly Jerusalem. This fellow is a Jew that has his name over it. And there's an angel there. Wait. You see? In Isaiah 65. And so if there's any old man, they're going to die at 100. Now let's reason this out and we can see it. In him, a person can stand dying then. You get it? Oh. Now the reason is the prolongation of physical existence. It had no spiritual existence. Eliminated from eating of the tree of life in the New Jerusalem. There's another reason for them dying at 100 years of age. Notice, a child shall die at 100 years old, but the sinner being 100 years old, shall be accursed. You see, Lilith won't have any sorrow. Souls. Pearl. Gate was one pearl. Individual gate, that every several gate. Gate was one pearl. Now, city, and the base of the city doesn't start immediately at the walls, shoes. They're open all the time. Oh, I suppose it would work. They'll live 1,000 years. There's no doubt about it. They'll not die. But they're going to have to be more than that normally. Those people are going to have to go with a Jew, if they're Gentile, earthly Jerusalem, go through their gate, and then observe the Feast of the Tabernacles. And then they'll go, order by tribe, in their order, up in that gate. They're going to be allowed the liberty to eat of the tree of life, the elongation of physical life. Nothing screws that, and I'd like to ask Zane Hodge, not us, we won't have to. All right. Put there to fill up space. There's some real water of life for certain people in the future. You've never drunk any water of life. How did you drink it? Where did you find it? What did it taste like? What did it feel like? What did you hold it in? To drink it. No, you burial of death of Christ for sins, the burial and the resurrection of Christ, and believing through that, you believe to a person, and you didn't have any water in that. See it and believe it. If this, they'll never be closed. Now, in closing, I want to show you why we'll be able to dwell in peace and all here on this earth. There was the Feast of Booths, their tabernacles, tents. They temporarily go up to Jerusalem, but it ends up in something permanent for them. Now, which is at the end of the tribulation period, they have to do that. And so if you look very carefully at the 14th chapter, everyone that is left of all the Gentiles which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not and rain, there shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the Gentiles that come not up to keep the feast of the day that they come up to the Jerusalem before the altar. And every pot in Jerusalem the light of God himself, a city of earth, if they meet the requirements, go there. And a city from which Christ go back. It's mile high. It will be destroyed except the New Jerusalem. They won't be part of the Bride of Christ. Millennium, they're going to be way lower than the Bride of Christ. Those in this time who believe in Christ.